When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H. Rewind to SmackDown. 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
Hello, everybody, over on YouTube and also on our free podcast feeds. This is Rewind to SmackDown, the free version where we talk about the show. Of course, I'm here with Neil Flanagan, our man, as we give John Pollock the evening off ahead of tomorrow's Money in the Bank and Worlds Collide. Neil, please say hello to our wider audience.
Hello to the wider audience. I'm sorry I'm not John. You're Babe. You actually have to join the Post-Wrestling Cafe to find out.
No context needed. Just start calling him Babe from now on, you know, as I have started to do.
Well, I was rolling around it that way when I was listening to Ask Away yesterday. Again, join the cafe, people.
Of course, Ask Away, one of the many shows we have over at postwrestlingcafe.com. So for your $6 a month, your support of Post Wrestling, we of course give you guys a lot of free shows, including Ask Away, a double-sized edition of the show that was just released, spanning a 30-something questions from John Pollock and myself, answering everything in wrestling and non-wrestling. It's always some of our favorite shows to do. So thank you guys for your questions and hope you guys enjoy that particular podcast. We also have right now, both on the paid cafe feed and also on the free feed, the latest edition of Post Pro Res. Post Pro Res, of course, is our monthly Japanese pro wrestling digest show with Karen Peterson and W.H. Park. We now usually do this one in the cafe, but we put this one up for free because there's the announcement of a new contest. Karen and W.H. are looking for our new theme song for this new iteration of Post Pro Res, and their requests aren't many, but they do have some, and it's primarily they do not want anything that sounds like something Sonny Oda Ono would have come out to in 1990 WCW. So that means unlikely, unless you could do it tastefully, probably no Asian flute music for this particular theme song. They also mentioned if you're going to use their names, they prefer WH and Karen to Park and Peterson. The prize for the winner, a year's access to the Post Wrestling Cafe. So we're going to grant you access to a double tier membership for the entire year. You get to listen to book club, get access to everything we do on our site. Even if you are already a patron, you can gift it or you can use it whenever your current term is up. So find details right now at forum.postwrestling.com and check out this week's edition of Post Pro Res as Karen and WH talk about Kosei Fujita's Best of the Super Juniors win, Mayu Iwatani joining Marigold. WH also cuts a hell of a promo on the Saito brothers in All Japan Pro Wrestling. So check that out. This weekend, I will be back with John for our Money in the Bank post show. John will also be discussing Worlds Collide. On Sunday, if you're looking for more Worlds Collide coverage, maybe in a bit more depth, our friends at Poison Rana will also be chatting about the show as they co-stream their Poison Rana live show, which is usually on their YouTube channel, but they'll be co-streaming on ours and then giving the Worlds Collide review onto our podcast feeds as well. So check that out. Sunday afternoon in the cafe, look for a UFC 316 review as well with Eric Marcotte and Jack Wannon.
Yes, those worlds colliding. Now, I know that Jack and Eric have podcasted before on the Poison Rana network, but I don't know that they've been together on post.
Could be first. Yeah. Could so be first by might themselves. Be first time. Yeah, I'm looking Young forward guns. To it. Yeah, those looking for more MMA coverage over on our site, you're in good hands with those two. So check that out Sunday. Let's go to tonight's edition of SmackDown from Bakersfield, California, the Dignity Health Arena. Tickets out, 8,800, according to Russell Tix. This is a sellout, as was announced on the show. We start things off here with Seth Rollins, Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, and Paul Heyman making their debut as a unit on SmackDown. We're getting lots of chance for Roman Reigns and CM Punk starting off. And Seth Rollins says that when he wins the Money in the Bank, he is going to have absolute power over this industry. And that includes both Raw and SmackDown. So he issues a warning to anybody on either brand. He goes through his list of victims, including Punk and Zayn, and mentions Reigns and says, Roman Reigns does not care about you. This somehow prompts, he says a few things, and then out come Solo Sikoa, JC Mateo, and Jacob Fatu. And we get a big stare down between our new or our two heel trios factions across the two brands. Solo, of course, is also in the Money in the Bank match tomorrow. Solo asks if this is Rollins' version of the Bloodline, and he addresses Bronson joining with Rollins despite working with him at War Games. Rollins teases Jacob being ready to turn on Solo and suggests a new name for Jacob, Solo's Bitch. Oh, he says that they are threatened by one Fatu here, and it's not Solo. So just continuing to drive up the tension between Solo and Jacob Fatu. We get some stare downs, including one between Jacob Fatu and Bron Breakker that elicited a pretty good reaction. Rollins and Jacob as well. Your thoughts on this opener?
I really like this. And we were told by Tessitore right at the beginning, there was major cross, with the PLE tomorrow, we can expect major crossover with the rosters tonight. So they were trying to hook you in from the beginning. And I think that getting these two kind of mirror image factions staring at each other lays some groundwork for some interesting things ahead. You know, I mean, we could leap all the way forward to War Games where that did get a mention at some point later on. I like this very much. I also kind of enjoyed the fact that Seth thinks being in charge of being in control of the entire industry is Raw and SmackDown, and that's it.
That's it. Yeah. Well, I mean, he can't cash in on the AEW championship, not that we know of. So I mean, I thought it was a cool little segment, like, you know, putting these two analogs against each other, and I never realized how exactly similar they are, but you know, they almost match up perfectly. You have like the heavy that's also like the up-and-coming prospect in a Bron Breakker matching perfectly with the Jacob Fatu. You have the sort of third member of the group who's also like, you know, a very sort of like new addition, but also like agile big guy in Bronson Reed and also JC Mateo. And now Solo Sikoa is kind of transforming into a bit of a Seth Rollins. Like he's become much more flamboyant in his sort of like delivery, and I just feel like the three are actually matched up way more similarly than I would have expected. All right, so
I don't think that's an accident either. I feel like they at least have some ideas for these two factions.
So afterwards, Jimmy Uso comes out and attacks Bloodline in order to take us to our first match, which is Jimmy Uso versus JC Mateo. Solo continues opening the invite to Jimmy to join his group throughout the match. JC dominates most of it. As Jimmy fights back, he's about to splash until Jacob gets onto the apron to distract. JC is about to attack Jimmy from behind, but Jimmy moves out of the way and JC knocks Jacob off the apron, leading to Jimmy rolling JC up, giving JC Mateo his first loss here. Afterwards, JC blames Jacob for the loss and tells Solo he's the problem, not me, as Jacob storms out of the arena alone. I thought it was a pretty standard match, Neil. You know, fine, not that memorable, but it does, of course, continue Jacob's babyface turn tease. Your thoughts on the match and also Jeff Cobb's run so far in the WWE?
I'm not enamored with Jeff Cobb's run in WWE so far. I feel like as solid a worker as Jimmy Uso is, he got way too much here. You know, first of all, he cleared, even before the bell, he cleared the ring of the heels with super kicks. I found him kind of an unconvincing opponent to hold his own so much with JC here. I don't really envy his current spot because, I mean, we see him later with Jay, and he really just seems like a B-level Jey Uso at the moment. But he gets a win here, and it's all in service of the, you know, the Jacob story, which we get more of later on. I feel like Cobb has not been booked strongly enough as a... He's not... For all the comparisons, he's not getting the big Bronson Reed treatment. He has had some very convincing wins with the Tour of the Islands, but here he is, you know, it's only one night, but...
I feel like, so, you know, Reed has had the benefit of, you know, having that run prior on Raw. And I think they really found something with him with the repeated tsunami gimmick. Like that I think makes him feel very special. They've yet to find that thing about Jeff Cobb. And it's somewhat unfortunate because you look at Cobb and what he's able to do, a lot of what he's able to do should feel special. But it just has not come across like that. I think they should be emphasizing just like the agility and the power that much more. Instead, he just kind of comes across like sort of the new Tama Tonga, you know, like the guy just kind of like being like filling the third spot behind Jacob and Solo. So haven't been that impressed so far, but it's still pretty early. We go to Zelina and Julia backstage. Zelina says she worked her ass off for this U.S. championship, and if Julia wants it, she'll have to pry it from her lifeless body. Julia responds by saying, I like you. You are confident. which is a great response.
I enjoyed that too. From you know, you will go, you're going to have to kill me, you know, and pry this from my dead hands.
I like you. Yeah. You're confident. Jacob Fatu is in the back, and Damian Priest runs into him. Priest says, it's tough working with family. I know what you're going through, and I don't envy it. But at some point, I am coming for your U.S. championship. Fatu, in his own words, basically says, okay, let's fight. But if you don't win, you're going to the back of the line. Of course, he said it in a much cooler way than I just did.
And he then asked Priest whether he knew what he meant in his...
Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
Tessitore gives it a go on occasion.
I know it's a Bay Area thing. I don't even care to attempt it. At some point I will, maybe, but not today. Bakersfield Brawl. We've got Zelina Vega taking on Piper Niven. It's a street fight, everybody. So that means kendo sticks, chairs, chains, you know, just everyday items you find on the street in Bakersfield. Piper puts a chain into Zelina's mouth and then kicks Zelina's face into the bottom turnbuckle. Zelina then delivers a tornado DDT to Piper onto an unfolded chair, and this is followed by an Arihara moonsault onto the entire Secret Service. They fight onto the top rope, and Zelina delivers a super code red to Niven, and it looked good. But at this point, Chelsea and Fire interrupt the count. Piper calls for the table, and we have, Neil, our very first appearance of the Slim Jim table. So if you're wondering what it looks like, it's a table with a big Slim Jim sticker on it, everybody.
Yeah, two Slim Jim stickers, way one at each end.
Oh, two. Okay. Yeah. You can't just have one, of course. Yeah. All right. So she's about to Piper is about to Vader splash Zelina through the table when Julia arrives to take out the rest of the Secret Service. So this is something unexpected. We thought Julia was a heel going after Zelina. Here she comes out helping Zelina Vega. Zelina tries to powerbomb Niven through the Slim Jim table, but Julia comes out to help her by attacking Niven with a kendo stick, allowing Zelina to complete the powerbomb. As Joe Tessitore makes the call, my, oh my, right through snapping that Slim Jim table for the win. Very natural. Zelina gets the win. As a match itself, I thought it overachieved, Neil. You know, I think Niven is probably among your best opponents if you're looking to showcase Zelina's undersized underdog gimmick. Yep. I thought they delivered on some very impressive looking moves to lift the crowd up, including the Orihara moonsault for Zelina, that super code red, and certainly this finish. So I thought it was a good fan-friendly weapons match.
Yeah, I agree completely. My first thought with this match was it took me back to the days of affordable house shows when WWE were doing their European tour, because there was always a Belfast brawl at our local arena. This is a very house show thing.
Were there Slim Jim tables?
There were not, no, unfortunately. No,
I see.
I will say about the Slim Jim tables, it's not quite as obnoxious as some of the mock-ups I saw, probably generated by AI online, with an absolutely enormous Slim Jim logo right in the middle of the table. This isn't quite that. It's more like a foot-long logo at either
end. I've seen these mock-ups. These mock-ups are
hilarious.
They're not even proper broken tables. They're just like...
They look plastic tables.
Plastic, like picnic tables that you'd put out in your backyard. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're happy with the Slim Jim table?
I'm not. It's not going to stop me watching or anything like that. They're fine.
All right. All right.
At least the Point of Impact doesn't have Slim Jim on it. So I guess they probably didn't want their logo to be destroyed.
I think they need to take it a step further and make the tables look like meat sticks, you know, somehow.
The legs particularly would be good.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Well, I agree with you. I really like this pairing. And I think that Selena's first title defense was against Piper. And I remember thinking, this is a really good TV match. Piper Niven sells really well for Zelina, you know, when she's twice her size. And she's a great base to work from. And she sells some of the moves that looked incredibly awkward, I thought, when Charlotte was trying to sell them, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I was last reviewing this show. But really, it's about the angle afterwards, isn't it? And practically everything on this show was about the angle afterwards, which is playing into tomorrow night, which is, I suppose, how it should be for a go home.
Yeah, although this isn't exactly tomorrow night, because it's more for beyond tomorrow night, as Julia comes out playing babyface, holding up Zelina's arm, but then attacks her with a headbutt and then a Northern Lights bomb. So, you know, I would say good heelish attitude from Julia throughout all of this. I thought she did a good job here, kind of like playing with our expectations, first coming in as a bit of a baby face, then just kind of snapping into into a heel role. So a good week for Julia, I thought, but it does kind of telegraph her chances at Money in the Bank tomorrow, I feel.
I agree.
Jey Uso is in the back. He is with Cody and Jimmy backstage. Both Cody and Jimmy separately ask Jey if he is okay after the tsunamis for Monday. Jey says he's banged up, but he's also kind of annoyed why people keep asking him if he's okay. He says he's the champion, and that's what champions do. Jey says that they only have to worry about what Cena and Logan have to say tonight, and then worry about tomorrow. So continuing the story of Jey just sticking up for his friends at his despite his own, you know, obligations, and possibly coming in a lot more injured than he's letting on. And that will continue tonight, of course. Aleister Black Room promo. He says it doesn't sit well with him that LA Knight took advantage of his black mask to get the pin in their Money in the Bank qualifier. Now he wants a singles match with LA Knight. And if Knight can beat him, then he'll shake his hand and admit defeat. So we get to our match, LA Knight versus Aleister Black. Knight comes out cutting a very charismatic LA Knight promo. Knight says this is his third year in a row competing in Money in the Bank, talks about all the competitors, and specifically addresses Seth Rollins. He says he's sorry if stealing the pin hurt Black's feelings. As Black comes out, we have our match. Black is about to go for his lion salt press, but Knight sends him to the floor as we go to the commercial break. We come back and Black hits it the second time and then gets a two count. They avoid each other's finishes. Knight catches him into a burning hammer, which his version is more of a stomach bump and not on the neck, of course. They're having a good match, so that means it's time for a distraction.
Yes.
DQ finish here. Out comes Seth Rollins to hit the curb stomp, giving us the DQ. Aleister Black suddenly confronts Seth Rollins, and here comes Bron Breakker with a big spear to Aleister Black, and then another tonight. So it it begins sort of the show long story of Seth Rollins targeting all of the Money in the Bank competitors to give himself the advantage. I suppose also notable the fact that like they made effort to have Aleister Black laid out too and have Bron Breakker do that. Do you think that's leading to anything else, or is that just more of a, you know, byproduct of it all?
It's hard to say. When they're not on the same brand, I don't really know. I think it's just part of them running riot, I suppose, here, you know, on visiting SmackDown and sort of causing.
Might have been one of those instances where like the two of them were acknowledging, hey, like we have history, some history, and this is us meeting each other for the first time in 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, and it was also a, you know, two baby faces facing each other in this match. So you've got the group of heels that they're probably going to attack the other good guy as well. But I agree with you that, I mean, after the first couple of minutes, I wasn't much enjoying the match. The sort of the collar and tie-ups where they were just spinning around, and then there was some head holes and stuff. But it turned into a very good TV match, I thought. And like you said, that was the signal that, yeah, someone's going to come and cause a DQ.
Yeah, they're making a lot of enemies throughout this entire show, Seth Rollins and his group. So Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce appear, and we are announcing our King and Queen of the Ring tournament starting next week. So they have merged essentially King of the Ring and Knight of Champions into the same event. So how it's going to work is, if you guys enjoyed your Money in the Bank triple threat qualifiers, you're going to love your King and Queen of the Ring four-way qualifiers, okay? Because we're getting four of them in each of the men's and women's tournaments. So eight fatal four-way matches across the next few weeks. And then the winners of those matches will join in co-branded singles matches in the semifinals and the finals, meaning a Raw person will face a SmackDown person starting with the semis. And then, of course, the finals will take place at Night of Champions, with the winners getting a title match at SummerSlam, which is the same way they did things last year with King of the Ring. So we don't know who's going to be in yet, but we had a bit of a hint here in our next segment with Byron Saxton talking to Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill is asked about the Queen of the Ring tournament, and she can't wait to tear through the tournament. And at SummerSlam, she's not going to ask for gold. She's taking it. She's asked about Bianca Belair and her relationship with her. But before she can answer, Charlotte interrupts, says that she is the only queen in the WWE, so we can assume both of their participation in the qualifying rounds. Stratton quickly walks in and tells the both of them good luck. So both Charlotte and Jade, potentially your entrance in the King of the Ring.
Charlotte with a very scripted line about friends and enemies and salt and sugar. Salt and sugar look the same, she said. I mean, they don't. Salt is smaller and not shiny and stuff. I can tell the difference. But anyway, it was something that caught my attention.
A better line would be, regular coffee and decaf look the same. So be careful which one you reach for on a Monday night. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
It's June on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are going through tons of your questions on the Ask Away Mailbag Show, and we're bringing you not one, but two editions of Rewind Away, including a review of the Katsuyori Shibata documentary, California Dreamin', covering his time as head trainer at the LA Dojo. Plus, Karen and Bruce have you covered for New Japan Dominion. Chris from LA has chosen another musical edition of Rewind Away to join Wei Ting and Nate Milton. Plus, we have extended editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown coming at you every single week, along with all of your weekly favorites. It's postwrestlingcafe.com.
All right, let's go to Legado del Fantasma. They have a cool looking video, all with them speaking in Spanish ahead of Worlds Collide. They want to dominate the world of Lucha Libre, and it starts by taking out Pagano, Psycho Clown, and the one who will always live in the shadow of his father, Dr. Wagner III. These guys sounded and looked really cool here, I thought. Good little video hyping up their Worlds Collide match tomorrow.
Yeah, they've done a few videos in this sort of cool apartment where they seem to live together. because just recently, I think it was this past weekend, they announced on a AAA show, I think last Friday, that they will be challenging Birdo and Angel are going to go to AAA to challenge for their tag belts at some point. And it was in this exact setting, so I think they've been filming a few of these. But yeah, they look cool. I like this presentation of them.
Byron is in the back with Chad Gable and American Made. Chad Gable says he's about to challenge. Okay. I know what I got confused with my notes, but I understand why. Chad Gable is here, and Byron Saxton says, you're about to challenge El Hingo Del Vikingo, which is a brand new wrestler that I didn't know was announced for Worlds Collide, but El Hingo Del Vikingo, is about to face Chad Gable. Gable is disappointed he didn't qualify for Money in the Bank, but he has a great replacement in El Grande Americano, who we did not see on the show. We only saw Chad Gable on this one. So Andrade at this point walks in. He's speaking Spanish, and Gable is doing a thing where he's responding to everything in C while nodding his head, which just confuses Andrade. Penta walks
Andrade starts saying CK. Yes, what?
Penta walks in, says, what's up to Andrade? And starts speaking more Spanish together as they laugh at Chad Gable. And at this point, somehow, Chad Gable gets mad. And Nick Aldis, it's a three-hour show, so he books a match between Andrade and Penta with the Creeds for later on tonight. I found Gable pretty funny here. All right, let's go to Tiffany Stratton, who's out next. She says, everybody in Money in the Bank is championship material, but it doesn't matter because their world revolves around her. You can train for one night, but no one can outdo the doer. So good confidence, good delivery from Stratton, I thought. Out comes Rhea Ripley. It's her first Money in the Bank because she says she's never needed it before. She misses being champion, however, and this leads into our six-woman MITB preview match with Rhea Ripley, Stephanie Vaquer, Alexa Bliss taking on Naomi, Roxanne Perez, and Julia. So we start things off with Julia and Vaquer, carrying on, I would say maybe unofficially, from their NXT feud history together. Vaquer goes for the Devil's Kiss, and at this point the crowd is very reactive. They are responding to it, and they are doing the noises themselves. So I'm sure Wade Barrett and Joe Tessitore were very grateful for that. They also responded really loudly because first it was Julia blocking it and taking it away. So they're just doing a great job, like crafting spots around this one big spot. So Naomi then teases her own Devil's Kiss on Vaquer, but Vaquer counters it and then delivers her own. And this is when the crowd started to chant. So Barrett then mentions Vaquer wrestling three matches within the next 24 hours, including this one. When you think about it, it's this, it's the Worlds Collide match, and then Money in the Bank, which is actually a very impressive run. They go through a commercial break with Bliss getting beaten up, building to a major reaction to Rhea Ripley hot tagging in. Mm-hmm. She delivers the razor's edge to Roxanne for a two count. Bliss then hits the Abigail DDT, and Rhea's riptide is countered, however, with a DDT from Perez. Roxanne then goes to tag Naomi, but at this point, Naomi just leaves her to be beaten up by the three faces. Riptide to Perez gets the victory for the babyface team as we get some very big reactions for everybody, I would say, but especially Rhea Ripley.
Especially Rhea, the We Want Mommy chance, and then they really did a very good build-up to the hot tag on this one. I mean, they always do this on TV, where if you're watching the international broadcast live on Netflix, if you're in one of those territories, they tend not to interrupt the match. So you just get the heat all the way through the break, and then shortly after you come back, you'll get the hot tag. This time they prolonged it a little bit more. I think it was better for that. I enjoyed this a lot. And I really loved what Naomi did. You know, she just, to hell with you, I want to win Money in the Bank. You know, this isn't going our team's way. I'm just going to walk off. I think I love that for her character. It's 100% makes sense. It's not something we see an awful lot with, heel teams. I thought it was great.
Makes perfect sense. Honestly, like when I thought everybody came across really well. And when you like mix these Raw and SmackDown women's divisions together, even just a slice of them like this. I mean, really, like now that we're getting all of these NXT call-ups coming onto the roster, you get to see how stacked this division looks, you know? It's especially great to me to see like the three call-ups being pretty well integrated into the show several weeks in Bakur, Julia, and Roxanne Perez. And, you know, you got returning Alexa Bliss, you got to refresh Naomi as well. So, it just feels like a fresh division. And I think they picked a pretty strong crop of six to feature for this Money in the Bank match.
Definitely. And just another shout out to Naomi way while I get the chance, because it's, you know, one of my sit-in stints. I just think she's doing an amazing job. And for me, the highlight of the entire show last week was her acting in the opening segment. Just the
crying
tears
on command.
And then the evil laugh. Just it was, I mean, not to me, it's just professional level acting. I think she's superb in this character. And I remember talking to you and wondering what a heel run Naomi might be like if it was her who turned out to be the assailant of Jade. And it's turned out brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
We see JC and Solo in the back. JC, to my knowledge, is speaking for the first time, I think, at least in one of these backstage segments.
At least at length, you know,
JC asks Solo if he can still trust Jacob Fatu tomorrow after what happened tonight. Solo says, don't worry about it. Jacob loves me. And also, he's not all that smart. He only thinks about himself. With him, it's all gas and no brains. And then they walk out of the frame and we just get from out of the bushes. Jacob Fatu peeks his head in. He heard all of it. And a small tear you could probably see fall down Jacob Fatu's eye. No,
this is easily the goofiest section of the show. And it wasn't just the fact that, you know, Jacob, you know, slips in from the doorway and he's heard everything that was said. It was the fact that Solo, when he's talking to JC, kind of looks over his shoulder. He sort of looks left and right before he says, you know, he's not that bright. He's not that smart. He's has no brains. And right in front of him, of course, is a camera operator. He doesn't seem to see that. You know?
Listen, Neil, okay? We've established this, all right? The invisible camera, it doesn't exist in the WWE. They're not aware. This is a secret meeting, clearly, you know? And Jacob Fatu, I guess they just don't have access to they do have access to TV because we've seen them watch the matches, but I mean, certain instances are just supposed to be completely, completely secretive, all right? Anyway, you got to feel bad for Jacob Fatu. Come on. Listen, hearing somebody say you have no brains. How
really hammering this
somebody give this guy a hug. Look how sad he looks.
I mean, it's fine, you know, and it's a good pro wrestling angle, but I prefer a wee bit of salty. You know, this was just completely heading over the head with it.
Yeah. All right. We get up next an Uncle Howdy promo here, pre-produced here. He says, grief is not healed by time. It's a festering wound continuing to open. You don't forget. You only accept that which cannot be changed. And then the video starts splicing in and out with Bray's face, like, on him. Or at least, like, split on the screen. It's really wild how much, like, a man looks like his brother. But, man, with the beard, and when you see the two faces, like, put side by side together like this, it's almost uncanny, you know. And of course, it's also the style of delivery of these promos. Like, Bo has really nailed like the Bray Wyatt delivery here. So he starts talking about observing the tag division, the loyalty, the trust, and the brotherhood. But he asks that those bonds aren't unbreakable like the Wyatt Sixes are, who are bonded by what they've lost. They're all going to take back what they're owed. Your brotherhood will be tested. We will not be forgotten. What did you think about this from Bo Dallas?
I thought it was very good. Very good delivery, like you said, and sort of channeling the reality of it all with, you know, grief is not linear, you know, the festering wound continually ripped open. You know. So we get the kind of Wyatt family style of delivery, but it makes more sense than it, I think it used to when we had the Bray promos, where it was sometimes a bit sort of garbled. I enjoyed that. The bit where, you know, it transitions into they've been watching the tag division on SmackDown. When he gets to that sort of specificity, you do roll your eyes a wee bit, but it is what it is. Of course, this is a pro wrestling show. It's going to end in a match, so they've got to go there. But no, I really enjoyed this. And the still for listeners that Wes pulled up, I mean, that's Bray, isn't it?
It's half Bray.
Okay. Yeah, it is uncanny then.
This I'm pretty sure it's half Bray, unless it's really all Bray. But I'm pretty sure this is actually, well, if not this one, then several of them are just completely spliced on top. Yeah. I like the sort of bringing up a brotherhood, you know, in the tag team division, obviously, just with Bray and Bo, and that sort of being like the, you know, the center of his own trauma, right? That makes a lot of sense. It's just, tonally, you kind of have to somehow make sense of it all when you're going from like this sort of like very serious story about like loss to Fraxium, like stacking them. Like, you know, it's just the vibe of the rest of the division is totally different. You know, you got DIY here, so we got our next segment. It's the entire tag division who's been called in to, I guess, watch this on TV with Nick Aldis, and they're all worried. You got DIY asking, who was it that provoked the Wyatts? Montez Ford tries to band them all together. He says, forget about the Tuttles for a second. We have to focus on the bigger problem in the Wyatt Six. Dawkins says that they're the real boogeyman around here, and they leave. Fraxium then volunteers to teach the Wyatts a lesson. So that seems to be our first match that we'll be getting. The Machine Guns say that they want the Wyatts too. And DIY at this point are just more than happy to sit back and let those teams beat each other up while they do nothing.
I'm pretty deadly or writing their musical or something.
I don't think they're in this at all. They weren't in this room.
So no, I don't. And last week, I don't think they figured much at all.
I think they're out of this division. Maybe they'll join the Wyatts at this point.
Okay. Yes.
So the entire division is focused on this new overarching threat in the Wyatt Six. Penta and Andrade versus the Creeds up next. Penta and Andrade are both in the Money in the Bank match tomorrow. Interestingly, they did not give us any sort of Penta-Rey Fénix interaction on the show. Nope. So probably saving that for a later time. Vikingo, El Hingo del Vikingo is sitting ringside here as Andrade and Penta start off with dives onto the Creeds during their entrance. Gable jumps onto the apron trying to rip Penta's mask off. And at this point, Vikingo comes in to stop him and they brawl out of the arena. Andrade then delivers a pair of back elbows as Penta hits the Mexican Destroyer to get the win for their team. In what I thought was a good way to promote the men's ladder match as well as Worlds Collide and that main event. Strong reaction from the crowd, I would say, for all of this.
Agreed, yeah. When this match was made earlier on, I was sort of, okay, this is just so symptomatic of the 3-hour SmackDown. We need another match, you know. But actually, they parlayed it into something pretty good, you know, that extends a storyline. Particularly with, I guess, Gable and Vikingo fighting into the crowd, that plays right into the Worlds Collide tomorrow as well. Which, you know, they promoted pretty heavily on the show, and it worked on me. I mean, I have more interest now than when the show was announced, certainly to watch it.
Yeah, in terms of ticket sales, I mean, they're at something close to what, like almost 10. Right?
Yeah.
Something like that for the forum, which is like for a show without really any like A-lister, I would say. Yeah. That's really impressive. Don't you think?
I do. Yeah. And I think it shows, particularly in California,
it's being headlined by Chad Gable versus Vikingo, who has not really had any matches on WWE TV, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's really strong.
It goes, I think, to one of the questions you and John tackled on Ask Away, which was about Lucha, you know, and it feels like particularly on the West Coast, I guess because of the proximity to Mexico and, you know, you've got a lot of family ties and so on. There really does seem to be a market there. And I think this show proves it, you know.
True.
The ticket sales for Worlds Collide prove it.
I also think, WWE are making a big effort to promote this in ways beyond what they typically do for any sort of takeover NXT special event. You know, like this feels like it's well ingrained into like the storylines on the main roster, and also NXT, of course. So maybe we'll go through the final card at the end of all of this. So at this point, as is expected, Seth Rollins and his crew come out for the third time tonight. They surround the ring. They beat up Penta and Andrade ahead of the Money in the Bank match tomorrow, including a tsunami to Penta. Heyman then grabs the microphone. He speaks for the first time tonight. Heyman says that everything Seth says becomes true, including what happened to Punk and Reigns at WrestleMania. They are the vanguard of the destiny of the WWE. Could that be our new faction name?
That I didn't note that. He said the word vanguard twice, and I thought, okay, that could be the name they're going to go with. They're going to have to pick one soon, I think.
And I wonder if Matt Hardy would have that trademarked.
Interesting.
Vanguard in a wrestling context. I mean... maybe they'll
I don't know if you could trademark it, because it's well, maybe for wrestling purposes, I guess, you know.
Of course you could trade. Well, I mean, WWE wouldn't be choosing a name if they couldn't trademark it. I don't think. I don't know how I feel about it.
Did you see a political party in my part of the world way back?
It makes me think so.
Vanguard.
It makes me think of mutual funds.
Yeah.
So, or ETFs. Anyway, they look like a bunch of accountants, don't they? Or stockbrokers in the ring here.
Braun doesn't so much.
Well, Braun, maybe he looks like a stockbroker on a weekend.
You know, okay.
Friday night. Yeah, this is Friday night at the bar with your friends. All right, we just...
No shirt.
Yeah, we just, whatever, balanced our portfolios. Anyway, Paul Heyman grabs the mic. Vanguard here. Before Heyman could do a test run announcing Seth Rollins as the reigning defending undisputed champion, he is interrupted by Cody Rhodes, who has a face-to-face with Seth Rollins. So Rollins is kind of coming in and like, he hasn't been on SmackDown in a while, so he's having these sort of like reunions with almost everybody on the show, and he's getting reacquainted with like an Aleister Black, here Cody Rhodes for the first time in quite a while. Rollins whispers something to Cody off mic during Jey Uso's entrance, and they slowly just leave the ring there. So we get our final segment. It is Jey and Cody, their final face-to-face with John Cena and Logan Paul. Cody mentions of Cena are met with "Let's go Cena, Cena sucks" chants at a very 50-50 level.
Yep.
Is that the level? What do you expect for the match tomorrow?
I expect it to perhaps at the beginning, and then maybe like tonight, that will, depending on how they book the match, fade somewhat. I mean, Cena, we'll get into it, but I think Cena did a very, very good job tonight. Now, circumstances were somewhat in his favor to cut the promo that he did that got the crowd booing him at the end of this. And, you know, you'll get to describe that as we go along way. But I kind of... There's almost a Pavlovian "Let's go Cena, Cena sucks" thing going on here. You know, every time he appears, I feel, because it's a farewell tour, and for a lot of the fans, I think it's part of, we're not going to see him again. This is what we sort of have to do when he appears. You know, let's go Cena. How about this?
Do you think it's the type of reaction that will get in the way of Cody's babyface reaction?
It could be.
Because I think that was part of the conversation, maybe even heading to WrestleMania. You know, it ended up kind of working out fine for them. But I don't know. I just wonder if the time off, I thought the time off would be enough to like make Cody loved and like sort of missed again. But I'm not so sure. Like seeing these two kind of side by side, I think there's still a bit of a sort of like, I don't want to say staleness about Cody, but a little bit of a staleness about Cody. I don't know how you feel about that.
Somewhat agree in the sense that like Cody is their number one baby face. He still gets the big reaction against Cena on his retirement run. It's sort of a different picture, particularly because it's been going on all year and we're getting into the summer now. We're getting more of it. What we're going to see tomorrow, I think, is just going to set up more of it again. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we get what we got in the build-up to WrestleMania, which is perhaps some of the crowd turning somewhat on Cody. I still maintain, and maybe I'm on an island, that the heel run in general has not been good, and that's infecting other other people on the roster, including Cody. And I still don't know how they get... It's their job to work it out. They get paid a lot, these creative people. It's their job to work out how to get Cena back to babyface in a convincing way. But I kind of hope that happens sooner rather than later because, the R-Truth stuff aside tonight, where he did get some real heat, that's a circumstance that you can't bank on. That's the kind of locked into that in a sort of unfortunate.
I guess I'll say for all I hear about that sentiment online from people like being very dissatisfied with the Cena heel run so far, I think he still gets these incredible reactions live. Like when you see these live reactions, I don't think that they would consider any of it a failure. I don't think they would consider any of this something that needs to be changed. You know, I think they're very happy with the type of responses that Cena has been getting.
My only issue with that is, yes, the crowd react huge, you know. And again, this is because they're probably seeing Cena in a wrestling ring for the last time. And that's what he should get in his retirement run. But if it's at the expense of Cody, who's the future, then, you know, they'll repair all of this. If there is a problem, if Cody winds up being booed, I don't think they'll turn him or anything like that. They'll get to where they want to be and, you know, any damage there can be fixed. But in the run-up to Mania, I think Cody was damaged a little bit. We both said, because I remember talking to you about this before on a Friday night, that time off should repair that. And there seems to be now... It's happening again. So that's my only gripe is that, they'll be happy with whatever reaction Cena gets as long as it's raucous reaction and he is getting a raucous reaction. But if it's somewhat turning someone or changing the perception of their top guy, then that's a downside, at least to an extent.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. So out comes John Cena in his Lakers-colored merchandise. He and Logan Paul attack the babyfaces with an AA and a pulverizer. Logan goes up top. He almost slips but catches himself as he delivers a frog splash onto both Cody and onto Jay. Cena says that nobody is coming out to save you. Cena will take his title home and Logan Paul will take the World Heavyweight Championship and calls Logan the inevitable face of the WWE, the future World Heavyweight Champion. They continue to beat down. And at this point, the crowd starts chanting, "We want truth." Cena chooses to address this and grabs the mic and says, "You can handle the truth." And he goes on to say, "You want our truth? Our truth is right here, staring you in the face. And there's no one who can do anything about it." He says, "You are hypocrites for chanting for truth. You are all pathetic liars." And of course, this only encourages more "We want truth" chants. So in all of this, they have made R-Truth a bigger babyface than he ever has been in his entire career. Now, this probably was the most interesting portion of this. Otherwise, I would say pretty typical segment, just kind of putting all the faces of the main event together. But what did you think of this? Was it Cena trying to shut down the R-Truth chant, or was it his way of encouraging them, maybe as tribute or to shout out, I guess, somebody whom he probably considered a friend? What do you think?
I think my suspicion is far more likely the second of those two options. Where, I mean, there is, and again, it's a mistake to get sort of sucked into the gossip and that you see on Reddit, but there is at least talk that Cena sort of asked, you know. I actually think it was an obvious thing to do all along because of R-Truth's doing the Cena moves and it's his childhood hero and all of that. I think having an interaction between the two of them in this run was kind of inevitable. But there was talk that Cena kind of amped that up, that he wanted Ron Killings to be a big part of the run and that he even perhaps thought that this might save, I don't know the truth of any of this, that he might save his job in doing so because... You know, he in the cost benefit analysis, truth has probably racked up quite a big wage at this point. You know, would be on that accountant's ledger as being, oh, we're paying this guy how much, you know? But
they're in cost. Back to they need to save that.
Dropping speculation and getting back to tonight, I really feel like, you know, this was, if anything, a tribute to truth, perhaps even an effort to build up this chant, which I think WWE are trying behind the scenes to tamp it down. They pulled that shirt, for example.
The Ron Cena shirt, yeah. You could still get other truth merch, but they pulled the Ron Cena one.
Yep. It was I collected for the site. It was a little roundup of kind of, because Truth's exit was remarkable by the reaction that it got.
Mm-hmm.
You had Kevin Owens, you had Road Dogg, you had a huge number of some of the bigger names in the company paying tribute to him and saying what a wonderful guy he was, oh no, blah, blah, blah. Some of those tweets were deleted later on, you know, and I'm glad that I sort of copied and pasted them rather than doing the links, because they wouldn't have appeared in the story. And that said to me that the company was maybe leaning on perhaps some of the lower end of the spectrum people. Take that down, you know, please, because we know that that happens.
Yeah.
Cena can get away with whatever the hell he wants.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he clearly had you can't handle the truth up his sleeve.
Mm.
I think you want, you know, the R-Truth is this, you know, I think he had that up his sleeve as well. I think he was ready for that chant and ready with these responses. And I think what they do is amplify R-Truth in people's consciousness more than anything. So
yeah, Cena had also posted to his very entertaining and very mysterious Instagram a photo after the announcement of Truth leaving, a photo of R-Truth in his Ron Truth gear as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very interesting continuing to see, because like all throughout the rest of the show, I'll be honest, I didn't hear any R-Truth chants, or at least nothing that was notable enough until this final segment. And not only was it loud, I would argue it was probably louder than they even were on Monday as a result of Cena encouraging, and maybe whether or not intentional, you know, the chance. So I continued to think that, like, they have to be thinking about how they're going to walk this back, you know.
I agree.
Making sure, because they're just creating a great big star for anybody else who wants to bring this guy in right now. And I think they want to try to shut that down.
I think there's still a wide open spot in the comedy realm for R-Truth in the company.
Yeah. And if I'm R-Truth, how much money am I asking for? Am I asking for more than my initial contract or what?
Yeah. If he's got some cards now, then
I want a 20-year contract.
Yeah. I mean, Chelsea Green, who's, you know, basically a comedy character, she, you know, one of her tweets was sort of like, you know, blazed the way for what she's doing now and so on. There's definitely a place for that in the whole world of sports entertainment that WWE excels at. I think they will walk this back. That's my suspicion.
Yeah.
And I think Cena's fueling that. I think he's doing it deliberately. This is all just supposition by me. But
who exactly is on board with it? You know, like, I mean, it's always like interesting to think about, like, whether or not people are doing something on screen that might be against the wishes of maybe somebody that is above them, and what sort of politicking might be taking place on screen here. I mean, we could just, of course, be, just overthinking everything, but I do also wonder if something like this is something that perhaps a talent is doing to force the hand of an executive who may otherwise decide differently.
And a talent of the caliber of John Cena, who is one of the few people who could get away with this. Hmm. Others would have been told, if there's we want truth chance, ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
I think with John, he can do what he likes. And up to that, I'll just mention, you know, that up to that point, that's what made this whole segment interesting. Up to that point, it was the usual nonsense like this. I just wanted to mention, you know, when they both had the belts after the beatdown, I take this home. He takes that, meaning the world championship, to the top.
Yeah.
This makes absolutely no sense. you know, what's the top if he's ruining wrestling by taking that title home?
Well, he's taking this lineage of this belt, the Bruno belt, home. That was always his threat. But yeah, exactly. He's not really ruining. You're not really ruining wrestling by doing that.
No, and we know that lineage has been splintered many times. So it's kind of weird.
Anyway. All right, so that was SmackDown, the final SmackDown, the last 3 hours before we get our 6 hours plus of programming tomorrow night. What did you think of tonight's show?
Pleasantly surprised by tonight's show. I enjoyed it. I think sometimes, you know, when the only thing announced was the six-woman tag, I thought, oh, God, they're just putting the Money in the Bank women's ladder match contestants together. And, you know, that's such a night before a pay-per-view thing to do. But, you know, the level of talent on the show, I think the Seth and his crew involvement was good. The mixing up of the rosters I always kind of enjoy because they do a reasonable job of keeping them apart for the, you know, these days for the most part. Mm-hmm. I like the matches all played into something too, which is what you would expect. Like the matches were like Jimmy and JC. So you had that miscommunication angle within the bloodline. So that furthers that story. Selena and Piper, you got Julia's interference. So that furthers the storyline. Knight and Aleister Black, Seth weakening his opponent for tomorrow. Naomi walking off, kind of that plays into the women's ladder match tomorrow. And Gable and Vikingo fighting, you know, during the tag match, that sort of plays into Worlds Collide. So good job of making these TV matches feed something that's next. And I think, you know, that's good for WWE television.
Before we go, let's go through one last time the cards for both events tomorrow. And let's start things off here with Worlds Collide. Not going to ask you for any predictions or anything, but if you have any like standout thoughts you want to convey, please do so. Worlds Collide starts at 3:00 Eastern time on YouTube here in both English and on Espanol here. We got the LWO taking on Octagon Jr., Aerostar, and Mr. Iguana in a 6-man tag team match. Notable here that Joaquin Wilde is being replaced by Lince Dorado, of course, due to a concussion he suffered this week. I'm expecting Mr. Iguana to receive some of the biggest reactions all weekend. And I just like, I don't know how many people have actually seen Mr. Iguana, but it's just, I see plenty of buzz just like surrounding the way this guy looks and how weird, you know,
it just
and
feels
interesting
like
the gimmick is.
Mr. Iguana has become very memeable all of a sudden. Yeah. And I'm certain it's from people who are not familiar with his work.
Yeah. All right. So then we've got Legado del Fantasma taking on El Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr., Pagano, and Psycho Clown. Feel free to jump in if you have any thoughts here. Stephanie Vaquer teams up with. Well, I'll just say for this. I mean, they're working the storyline with. I'm sorry. I forgot. The Garza. Berto is very skeptical of Santos's leadership. And this seems like a temporary, you know, like, okay, I'll follow your lead to see what you got planned.
Yeah.
But I also ultimately think that's their storyline. So I'm guessing some miscommunication happens leading to Legado losing this with Berto perhaps getting pissed off and wanting to depart the group again. Then we've got Stephanie Vaquer taking on, teaming up with Lola Vice, taking on Dalis and Chick Tormenta. So this is the second match that Stephanie Vaquer is having in 24 hours. And I'm expecting a very, very strong reaction for her as well. Let's move on to Ethan Page defending the NXT North American Championship against Javon Evans, Rey Fénix, and Laredo Kid in a fatal four-way match. Is it possible to see a title change in this one, you think?
I do think so. I don't know that it would go to Laredo Kid, but
if it's to anybody, I think it would be Javon. You know, who possibly win the belt.
Yeah,
I mean, otherwise, of course, this would have been Ricky Saint's role to have Paige hold on to it. I could see his role being a very transitional champion for the title. And maybe there's a desire to want people to leave the show with having seen at least one title change. Mm-hmm. You know, I could very much see Javon winning it in this particular match, but this is obviously going to very likely be the show stealer. But not to be outdone, we have, of course, our main event. Chad Gable challenges El Hijo, not Hingo, Del Vikingo for the Triple A Mega Championship. This could also be incredibly spectacular as a very interesting mixture of styles. Gable is amazing, and I think seeing him paired off with the High Flyers is going to be outstanding too. For a lot of people, this is probably going to be their first viewing of Vikingo in a full match, and he will be dazzling just if he does if he does like half of what he's able to do, the way I just remember the Kenny Omega match doing for so many people watching him on AEW for the first time. So I'm anticipating a lot of those crowd reactions, like with 10,000 people in this arena for a lot of his spots.
Yeah, this will be a really, all being well and touch wood, no injuries and so on. I think if everything goes according to plan, this will be a really, really good match.
Also interesting to see like what Gable will lead this match out of, so that he will take potentially whatever injury he has into Money in the Bank as a sort of carryover mm-hmm. storyline, if there is. All right. So that is Worlds Collide. Again, John will have some notes from it on our Money in the Bank review tomorrow. Our friends at Up Next and Poison Rana will have a longer review about it on Poison Rana Live, which you can find on our YouTube channel and Poison Rana Pod, their YouTube channel as well. All right, let's go to Money in the Bank and let's talk about the grand four matches we have on this particular card. Starting things off with, for the Intercontinental Championship, Lyra Valkyria defending against Becky Lynch. If Becky loses, she can no longer challenge Lyra for the championship. Becky has already lost two times. Oh, sorry, I'm showing the wrong graphic here. Becky has already lost twice to Lyra Valkyria. What do you anticipate the result for this one?
I think this is a shoe-in that that Becky wins this match. I'm enjoying these two together. They've been putting on really good matches. The previous one was excellent. And I'm happy to see the feud continue. So I think Lynch wins. She takes the women's IC title and Lyra is in the chasing role again. And I think all of this is helping Lyra Valkyria sort of her character develop and all the rest of it. And, you know, behind the scenes, I'm sure Becky is doing all she can for her friend in that respect as well, because we all know that Becky Lynch, you know, with the infamous Irish dancing and so on, and, you know, in her NXT start, she had to struggle as well before she was able to find the man character and all of that. So I think these two are great together, and that's my prediction for the result, at least.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't really see any other result coming out of this. I mean, I think Lyra in this Becky Lynch run has definitely gotten the value that I think we've been looking for from her out of this IC title run. Like, her promos have really stepped up and have been featured as a showcase point over the past several weeks, to the point where, like, even if she loses the championship now, I think she still leaves this with something new attached to her, something that I think she can build on without even having the championship, you know, her new voice. So whether or not they continue this feud afterwards, I'm a little bit more doubtful for, because that'll have been a lot of these two together. But Lyra will hopefully take enough, like, sort of skills to, like, show this company that they can push her even without this championship. And Becky, of course, like, with the belt, kind of opens her up for bigger matches, especially as we head towards SummerSlam. All right, let's go to the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. We've got Stephanie Vaquer taking on Alexa Bliss, taking on Roxanne Perez, Naomi, Rhea Ripley, and Julia. I want to get your thoughts on who you think will win, as well as maybe any other sort of notable storyline points.
If they want to inject Alexa Bliss back into the main world title scene, then I could see a win for her. I want Naomi to win. I think that character would be absolutely awesome with the Money in the Bank briefcase as well. You know, she'll use it as a weapon, of course. She'll put her caution tape all over it. I don't have a cool in the bank caution in the bank. No, I don't have anything there, but, you know, that's who I want to win, because I'm loving the Naomi character at the moment.
Yeah, Naomi and doesn't really work. I think those are probably my top candidates as well, because I don't really see it being any of the call-ups here. You know, again, they picked a great six to showcase here in three of the NXT call-ups. And also Alexa Bliss and Naomi, who still at this point feel very fresh, you know, whether it be due to absence or the debut of a new character. And of course, the biggest star in the entire division in Rhea Ripley. Of the two, I would, it's a hard one to pick. Because are we completely writing off Rhea Ripley's chances?
Well, it's the old adage about, you know, the money in the bank briefcase is better on a heel.
Yeah.
And I think the Rhea character is better served by winning it the hard way. But I wouldn't rule it out. No, I am kind of ruling out the other three, though.
Yeah, I think I'm going with Naomi. I think I'm going with you. You know, I think the gimmick feels right on her. Like, she's also been somebody who's been beaten up by Jade so often. Getting the Money in the Bank briefcase, kind of like, this is how they book the Money in the Bank. Well, this is how they book people with the Money in the Bank. They drop the shit out of them because they eventually end up just cashing in and maybe erasing all of that anyway. I think Naomi is a great option. I can also see it being on a babyface in Alexa Bliss as well. So, all right, let's go to the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. We got LA Knight, Penta, Andrade, Solo Sikoa, Seth Rollins, and El Grande Americano. Do you have a pick for this one?
It's difficult. I'm kind of ruling out Penta and Andrade and El Grande Americano. So that leaves three.
Why do you write them?
I know they're still into this Americano storyline, and I feel like they could have fun with him having the case. But I think when they do comedy and Money in the Bank, it doesn't work wonderfully well, like we saw with Otis. That was a complete flop. So it doesn't mean they won't. I won't rule it out, but I think Rollins is kind of the obvious one. We haven't had Heyman do his, and that's not a spoiler. That's, we haven't had him say that. I thought that was coming tonight, and it's often more often the case that when he does say that, it's what happens.
Mm.
There's mileage in Solo having it, I guess, because it puts him somewhat above Jacob in the pecking order, but I don't think that storyline really needs it.
Yeah, because he's so tied to Jacob, and Jacob is firmly in the U.S. title level. I don't really see that pairing. You know, unless it's like Solo somehow going for Jay on the other show, which I also don't really see happening because Jay's got so much other stuff happening as well. It's also assuming Jay keeps the championship. Anyway, I don't see the direct path for Solo. I mean, I said on Monday, I felt like El Grande Americano would actually be like a really interesting gimmick to have the briefcase because I'm curious to see like how he holds it while Chad Gable also tries to dance around the idea that like he's also the Money in the Bank winner, but that he's not actually being recognized and therefore can't cash it in. I don't know how that would work, but the more I talk about it, the more I think I agree with you. It's hard for me to see like what is ultimately a bit of a comedy gimmick with what I think is a very important device in the company. So does that leave Seth Rollins?
It does, seems to me. But I mean, it's I'm not ruling it out either. I mean, I think they can learn lessons from Otis and his character wasn't really that fleshed out. The fact that they've got this sort of double identity thing going on with Chad Gable, they can get some mileage out of that as long as they don't just, as they say on my side of the Atlantic, as long as they don't rip the piss out of it. In other words, like, as long as they don't string it out so long that everybody gets like tired as hell of it. You know, if they do it for a little while and then have the cash in as the payoff, then by all means. But I think Rollins and Americano in that kind of comedy kind of double identity thing, I could see that. Yeah. Knight as an outsider, as a dark horse.
Yeah. Very possible, I suppose, too. Like the unexpected one that I think Money in the Bank championships. Jey Uso this year for the Rumble was a totally unexpected person. And if you're, I would say very much like LA Knight is sort of on the Jey Uso pre-Royal Rumble level that could really use something like this to really kind of push him into that next level to confirm his status as a main eventer. they're pushing the Rollins win so hard that it almost feels too predictable. And yeah. I could see an outside pick in LA Knight coming in and maybe taking it from him. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think I'm going with the safe bet in Seth Rollins. We also should mention that, you know, throughout all of this is the Jey Uso story of him being constantly weakened, constantly injured through all of this happening, including the main event we're about to talk about. That all, and we also love how they don't like to have two briefcases active for too long. So yeah. One of the two briefcases has a very strong chance of being cashed in, whether tonight on this particular event or the night after the Gunther match. So the scenario that I could see is Rollins winning this one, maybe teasing on Sunday, but then maybe actively doing it on Monday during the Gunther match to make that a three-way, as he did in that WrestleMania, of course, as a replay of Rollins, you know, what he does. It's just all, I think, very important to kind of, you know, think about when it comes to this particular Money in the Bank, and therefore I think Seth Rollins winning makes the most sense because you could play out all of those scenarios.
Yeah. And I know we're not taking calls tonight, but Hansi in the chat has said exactly the same as you just said about cashing in during Gunther and Jey. Mm-hmm. The same idea, which I think would be great. And I like this formula of having a swift cash in with one of the cases, because the endless teases that you get with the other winner wears thin. And if you've got two competitors doing that all the time, the woman and the man, it's just too much.
All right. Lastly, we've got our main. Well, we don't know if it's the main event, but it is the John Cena match on the show. It's Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso taking on John Cena and Logan Paul. Who wins this one, and what are sort of our programs coming out of it?
I'm hoping for something unexpected, something interesting, some interesting booking in this match, rather than just a straightforward tag match. You know, some sort of return, something unexpected. You know. Maybe R-Truth comes into this.
It's going to be Travis Scott.
God.
Come on, you know he's going to be there. It's LA.
I guess. I hadn't thought of him. I'm trying to forget him, to be honest, after WrestleMania. But you're right. They've got to bring him back. And I guess he'll probably get involved. That doesn't fill me with joy, I have to say. In an ideal world, I'd have seen him take the pin in this match just so that he can. But I don't think they will do that to him at this point.
What are the chances R-Truth shows up?
Yeah.
He's still under contract.
Not zero.
Contract, I believe.
He's still under contract, and it's a very swift decision to be made to extend that contract after all.
Yeah, yeah.
So a very much a non-zero chance of R-Truth, and, you know, involvement in this. And then of course you'll get everyone on the net saying the entire thing was a work.
Yeah, yeah.
Beginning to end.
But I'm curious to see if those chants continue throughout the entire course of the evening here. But I with Cena, I could definitely maybe expect them a little bit louder, certainly with Logan Paul. You know, because Cody lost at Mania, I think he needs the win. He needs to pin either Logan Paul or maybe even better hitting John Cena in this tag team scenario to, obviously get him to challenge for the belt, which is what I think the destination we still all see at present. Whether or not that happens at Night of Champions or SummerSlam, I guess, will remain to be seen as well. Mm-hmm. Can you see a Logan Paul, Jey Uso rematch coming out of this?
Yeah, I can, absolutely. They still got quite a bit of time to fill coming up to SummerSlam, so
yeah, I could see it. I could see it in Saudi. Honestly. Mm-hmm. All right. So those are our matches for Money in the Bank. John Pollock and I will be back tomorrow night after all of it. And at this point, we say goodbye to our free listeners over at YouTube. Please like and subscribe to the channel. And if you really like us, consider signing up at postwrestlingcafe.com, where we will continue the show. We did a bit of a news pack earlier talking about all the top stories of the day as well. And you will get ad-free time-stamped access to this show and all of the shows in the Post Wrestling catalog. So, all right, thank you guys for joining us. Let's go to the feedback.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.